You are Locked On Cavaliers, your daily Cleveland Cavaliers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Cleveland Cavaliers select Darius Garland from Vanderbilt University.
My. It's called the Kevin Love Show.
Cleveland! This is for you!
Joining me now, Trevor Magnotti, for the Sword Draft Guru, the Step Back Draft Guru, the person who knows more about European basketball than anybody I know. Trevor, what's going on, buddy?
Not much. I'm just trying to get by in these trying times. It's not great when the only thing that you can focus on really that is basketball related is this terrible, terrible draft we have coming up at some point. so it's been real rough trying to get motivated to talk about this because it's like nothing matters, and especially not any of these players who are all pretty terrible.
Yeah, we'll have Trevor on to talk about the draft because we're gonna get into a whole bunch of that stuff with the Cavs in the coming months. Whenever the draft ends up happening, we don't really exactly know yet, but it is, we'll see what goes on there. But what we're going to talk about today is a little bit of a lighter topic, certainly a little bit of a goofy product for us to kind of get into, but it's the Cavs draft mistakes basically from the last decade ish we're going to go back to 2009, maybe a little before if there's certain guys we want to kind of throw in there, just as kind of the, as weird as you got to remember, the Cavs like didn't have a draft pick in 05 and 07 because they were just trading them away. Like it was no other really option there. Trevor, where do you want to start with this? Who's like someone you're just like, this guy is just a hilarious player, like he's just like a disaster for whatever reason? Anyone stand out to you? I have one that I think is actually, looking back, the most damaging miss, but is there anyone that really stands out to you, is just that you want to start with?
Well, I think we should set the tone with just kind of talking about, you know, I've talked about a lot in kind of like my read of how drafts develop is you have the smart teams and you have the dumb teams. You have the smart teams that pretty much always seem to hit on their picks, and even if they don't get like a star caliber player every time, get the maximum that they could probably expect to get out of the guy that they take. Then you have the teams like the Kings, who always seem to be at the top of the draft, always seem to be taking players who either don't fit what they're trying to do, players who create positional log jams, players who have no business being taken at that spot. The Cavs kind of fit themselves into a third category where they lean more towards the dumb side, but they think they're a smart team. So you get these picks that are kind of trying to outsmart everybody else. So I think the best way to talk about this team and their draft mistakes is to talk about the best example of that, which is taking Christian Ayanga in the first round.
Love it. My favorite Christian Ayanga story that I just learned yesterday is that friend of the program, Space Phone Mars on Twitter, played him in Splatoon, which is a Switch game, I guess, and just was like attacking him and destroying him and like bullied him out of the game.
Amazing.
Yes.
Yeah. So Ayanga, you have a guy who, you know, he was playing at the professional level in Europe. And, you know, that's not something that happens routinely. You don't get like young guys who are consistently playing at that level. He was playing for Joventut Badalona, which is the same team that Ricky Rubio played for prior to coming into the league. The thing with Ayanga was that he didn't really have any skills. He wasn't really good at basketball, and you could kind of see that when you watch his pre-draft tape. And it's just, you know, it's an example of a guy, of them looking at a guy, seeing his athleticism and seeing, you know, cases that had come before where, you know, teams had taken like these super athletes who were really raw and had been able to, you know, turn them into something really useful. you know, like your Andre Iguodala's, guys like that who had come in through the past couple of years, and they were like, we can do that, and we'll do one better. We'll take the guy who no one has ever heard of, and we will turn this guy into a star. And they got him in, and it turns out that he just had some fundamental flaws that, you know, prevented him from even seeing the floor, much less having any sort of impact for the team. And, you know, it's the 30th pick. You can make mistakes with that pick. You're not expecting that pick to be like a long-term member of your team. But, you know, you look later in that draft, you've got guys like DeJuan Boyer, guys like Dante Cunningham, Jody Meeks, Jonas Jerebko, who were in the league for close to a decade each, and, you know, some of those guys played valuable roles for a playoff team or two. And, you know, that's the type of pick that the Cavs have been about over the last 10, 15 years, is rather than taking the guy who makes the most sense at the spot, they try to take the guy who is a home run swing that they, if they hit it, they look like geniuses, but they have not looked like geniuses really at all with any of those picks.
If you want to look at that and compare it to now, I think the thing that's interesting about that is if you could compare it sort of to like what they did with KPJ, because they paid a lot of money. They took a guy that, you know, some labeled as like a top 5-10 guy, and like the talent was clearly there, but then he fell for a variety of reasons, and they take him at 30. I think the difference when you look at them, you take a home run swing and frankly spend money on a guy like KPJ versus Eng, is that like KPJ, like, at least there's like a baseline skill set you're kind of working with, and stuff that you can sort of know. And it's probably a little easier to scout him based on where he's playing, and it being 2020 or 2019 at the time, and not, you know, 2008. There's just a difference there. And the hit rate on those picks, I guess the argument for like rolling on a guy like I is like, the hit rate's already pretty low, so why not go for it? But yeah, like I'm pro just like finding guys who actually like know what they're doing in the draft, especially at that point, because frankly, like it's more beneficial to your team to have a guy that can contribute in the first 4 years of his contract when he's really cheap than having to wait till a guy's gonna, like, you have to bet on his potential again when he comes to your second contract.
They've never taken the safe guy. They've never been a team that is going to take Grant Williams, that is going to take, you know, Kevin Herter, guys who, you know, have clearly defined skill sets who would be complementary pieces with those later picks. Instead, the later picks have always kind of been those home run swing type things. And, you know, even looking at their picks that have come like outside of the top overall pick, but have come in the top 10, it's kind of the same thing. They don't take the guy who, you know, might have a shot at being like a perfectly reasonable rotation player. Instead, it's this guy is going to be a building block, a foundation piece for us, or he's going to be out of the league in 5 years.
Is there who is like the safest pick besides LeBron? Who's like the safest pick that Cavs ever made, do you think?
Well, not counting Kyrie Irving, just because I think that Irving and Wiggins are like the two picks that they've made that, you know, it was obvious, and they would be like, it would be a disaster if you don't take that guy at the number one spot. And I feel like that's different. That's kind of a different thing, because you're taking, you have the first pick in the draft and you have your pick of the litter, and you take the best guy. So I don't really count that, because that doesn't really indicate anything about your team's decision-making process. I think the safest pick that they've made in the last decade would probably be Joe Harris.
With my answer as well, even though it clearly didn't work.
Yeah. I think that, you know, with what they were expecting that team to be at the time in 2014, because remember, this draft happens before they know that they have LeBron coming in. He's a guy who I think that fit the mold of the players that they had on the roster and fit kind of the things that they needed their wings to be able to do around what was supposed to be Kyrie, Deion, Andrew Wiggins kind of core in the backcourt.
David,
you know,
Trevor, who was the coach? Remind us all who was the coach and what he was going to supposedly do.
Well, it's David Blatt. You hired David Blatt, and he was going to bring in kind of this European-style system, highly focused on ball movement, focused on, you know, kind of being egalitarian and creating good looks for everybody on the team. And Joe Harris, you know, he's shown in Brooklyn with Kenny Atkinson basically running that type of system that he can be a really good player. So I would say that he's probably the guy that they've taken. And Dylan Windler is also kind of along those lines. He would be another guy that I would argue, you know, if we ever actually see him in a Cavs uniform, he would be a similar guy where it's just a guy that you can plug in. He's going to be like your seventh man, but you know, he's going to give you good minutes as your seventh man.
He's a guy that I think really would have been good to see this year. I think he really, really would have fit in a way that the team just didn't have otherwise. All right, we're going to take a quick break, come back, talk about more of these draft disasters coming up now, next on Locked On Cavs. Trevor, we're back. I'm going to make you my argument here for the number one miss of the last 10 or so years. It's not Anthony Bennett. Because the Anthony Bennett thing gets sort of wiped away because they're able to trade him after a year. I think, and I it hurts my soul to say this, I think Deion Waiters is the biggest miss that the Cavs made in the 2000s because it's a guy that ultimately they wouldn't have theoretically had to trade. He was not in the Wiggins, he was not in the Kevin Love deal. Here are just some of the guys that were drafted that are serviceable, if not very good NBA players that were picked after number four in that draft. Dame Lillard, Harrison Barnes, Terrence Ross, Andre Drummond, Austin Rivers, Myers Leonard, Jeremy Lamb, Mo Harkless, Evan Fournier, no Google himself. You know, you go down the list, there's guys kind of deeper, like Draymond obviously is a bit of a reach, but second-round pick. Chris Middleton is a second-round pick in this draft. I think it's just like, obviously it worked out, they won a title, they're able to trade Deion and get stuff for him and kind of rework their roster that first LeBron season, but I think when you just think about like them missing on a like and having someone to actually even build around with Kyrie, the Deion thing is just like it's incredible how badly that worked out looking back. Like and how just everything about it with them, like remember like when they held the press conference so like to admit they didn't like hate each other, like all this stuff. I feel like that is the biggest miss of the last 10 or so years.
See, I kind of disagree. I think that when you look at the way that that draft unfolded, and I'm a huge proponent of when we do these redraft things, you know, not just looking at the names and the outcomes there, but kind of really considering who is realistically on the table.
Oh, and that's very fair. That's very fair.
For the Cavs at four. I mean, you mentioned Evan Fournier and Jeremy Lamb. Neither of those guys was going to go fourth in this draft. Realistically, the options for the Cavs outside of Waiters were probably Harrison Barnes, Andre Drummond, and Thomas Robinson, because Willard, another point guard, was not going to be on the table for this team.
There was a big Robinson push at the time, too, which is one of the things that I think has aged the worst about that draft. Is like, I just think there's a very famous Cleveland columnist who I won't dox here, but was like, I want to pair Tristan and Thomas Robinson. And I remember even then, I was like, I wish I knew very little about basketball then, because that was 9 years ago, almost at this point, 8 years ago. That's crazy. We've gotten old, Trevor. We've really gotten old.
Oh, yeah.
We're washed, bro. But that was one of the things I was like, that just doesn't make sense to me. And that was like an argument at the time. And I don't even know where Thomas Robinson is now.
Yeah. I mean, Thomas, like you look at the outcomes for the players that were taken that were realistic options. I mean, we know Thomas Robinson is out of the league. Harrison Barnes, while he's a starter level player, is not a guy that you want to build around. He's kind of spent his entire post Golden State career proving that. Maybe he would have been effective on whatever a Cavs LeBron team looks like in that alternate reality where he's maybe a third year player, but you don't necessarily know that. And then Andre Drummond, you know, we are acutely aware now of what that looks like. And I really don't think that was as big of a mistake as kind of it seemed like at the time, because the Cavs did reach for Deion. The Cavs did pick him over those players, and he was kind of expected to be more in kind of like the 8 to 12 range in that draft. If you look at some of the mock drafts that led up to it, he was not a guy who was considered a top five prospect in that class. But still, I think that that one is less egregious to me than some of the other picks that have been made probably more recently. And that's pointing to, I think that Waiters makes more sense at number four in that draft when you consider who else was around on the table at that time than Colin Sexton does in 2018.
Wow. Get the take out. Let's go. Give me your take here. This is the hottest take on Lockdown Cats. Let's go.
Well, I mean, you go into the 2018 draft, which is the deepest draft of the last decade, bar none. You go into that draft unsure of LeBron's future, unsure of kind of what the team is going to look like, you know, 3 weeks after you make the pick. So, yeah, I understand why they kind of bought into Colin Sexton. You know, things didn't break exactly the way that the team wanted. You know, Trae Young doesn't fall to them. I know, or they had worked him out in the pre-draft process.
Dane Gilbert went to a game where I think Sexton played Trae Young in Tuscaloosa, I think.
Yeah.
They were pretty known to love Trae.
Yeah. And you already knew that Shai Gilgeous-Alexander did not want to come here. Did not want to play for Cleveland. But
Trevor, let's circle back to that too, because I have it. That's the last time I'll cut you off. I just like wonder. We're going to talk about the Shai thing, but continue.
Yeah, I think that, like, so, you know, your realistic options there, you know, the next guy who goes on the board is Kevin Knox, which is, you know, just the same situation. You're looking here at three guys, I think, realistically, for that number eight pick who make more sense as kind of building blocks than Sexton does. Mikal Bridges at 10, because you're and Miles Bridges at 12. Those are two guys who are, you know, look like they're going to become elite 3-and-D type players. Miles Bridges looks like he has a little bit of creation upside. Mikal Bridges is a much better defensive player. Neither of them is flashy, and neither of them is going to be kind of the splash that we know that Dan Gilbert loves to make, but would have been great options. And then you got Michael Porter Jr. at 14, you know, the guy who I think, if knowing kind of how the Cavs operate, I was kind of surprised that he was not the pick at number eight, because he was the guy who I thought fit most what this team is about. You know, he was a guy who didn't really get to show everything that he is capable of at the college level. He had a very good reputation though. You know, was one of the top recruits in the 2018 high school class. And, you know, if they can get him healthy, they probably end up looking like geniuses. And I think that he was the guy who would have made the most sense for them at eight. And, you know, I'm not a huge Michael Porter Jr. guy, but I think when you look at how this team has developed, and especially how they, you know, how the team has reacted to Colin Sexton in terms of the locker room, and it says nothing about Sexton as a person, but just how the vets have reacted to him, and how they still were looking at point guards in the 2019 class, you know, I really think that they probably would have been better off looking at one of these other wing players, because, you know, Darius Garland looks a lot more palatable next to one of those guys than he does, you know, next to Colin Sexton. And it doesn't, you know, the ripple effects of that pick, even though he may end up being the best player that the Cavs have drafted in the second post LeBron era so far, I really think that, you know, when you look at the decision making that went into that, setting up a guy who you know is going to make a ton of mistakes, does not have a ton of polish, and may not be the type of kind of distributor and facilitator that you need to be able to keep all these veterans that are in here without LeBron happy, you know, that's a pretty big mistake, and I think has set up some of the trials that this team has gone through and the circus that the team has been over the past couple of years.
I think it's an interesting argument. I think, too, there's just like the run of point guards that has kind of, I think, certainly impacted. Like, it'd be easier to take like LaMelo Ball or whomever in June, which is like a creator heavy draft. Or if you fall and it's just like, I don't know who to take here, it gives you a little more flexibility. I get that argument. I think for me, the biggest miss, and I just I get why you do this, but it's like Shea's so good. Shea Alexander is just so good. And even if you have him instead of Sexton, it's just the fit with Garland's just more seamless because Shea is kind of a point hybrid wing and is really, really good. And again, I don't know about the development. Like, he certainly benefited from going to the Clippers, certainly benefited from being in OKC, and that team is just well-coached, well-run, everything. Those are two organizations that are just, I think, frankly, more competent than the Cavs are in their current iteration. But it's hard. And I also just quite don't know what to make of all the signaling that you don't want to go to a certain spot when, like, I'm pro player empowerment. But when the teams, like, have the rights in the contracts, like, what is Shea's leverage to really not go there? Is it just going to be miserable? Like, is that enough to pass on a guy who is good? And I don't know how the Cavs draft board looked. I know they love Sexton's workout, and maybe that matters and all that stuff, but it's just a kind of an unknowable question for me.
Yeah, I think that, you know, and that's kind of why I threw Shea out, is because, like, the teams have access to more information than we do. And, you know, that is there are those factors that come in. You know, we bring up Michael Porter Jr., but a thing that very well could have steered them away from him is there has been scuttling about his certain, you know, political beliefs. And we know the political beliefs of the core of the Cavs veterans on that LeBron team, how they feel about kind of how things were going politically at the time and in a certain election where they fell versus where Michael Porter Jr. fell. And maybe there was some nervousness about that. You know, there's a lot more information that goes into this in terms of, like, kind of how these decisions get made. And some of them just don't have anything to do with basketball. And I get that. But still, I think that, you know, Sexton, while he's, you know, a fun player, and I think they have they finally started to look like they've gotten something out of him, he's really made the rebuild hard. Just his presence on the team and what his skill set demands in terms of how you build your rotation has made things really, really difficult.
I think that's a fair argument. Okay, one last break. We'll be back to talk about some other guys that have been taken and messed up by the Cavs in the last 10 years. That's coming up next on Locked On Cavs. Trevor, we're back here. Give me another guy you want to talk about. I hope that there's one I'm hoping you want to.
Well, I think we should probably talk about 2013, because in hindsight, that draft was a disaster.
Absolute disaster. It's one of the worst. They traded away the guy who ended up having the best NBA career, and even that guy is just like, I'm Allen crap. But they drafted three guys. Their second round pick played 7 games. The first overall pick was Anthony Bennett, and the other pick was Sergei Karasev.
Yeah. And, you know, in a draft, this is a draft that is informative for us because it's probably going to unfold very similarly to how 2020 is, meaning that, you know, there is a complete vacuum at the top of who should be considered the number one pick. There's not a clear option at number one. There's not a clear option at number two. There's not a clear option anywhere in the top 10. That is how this draft unfolded. You know, the Cavs were considering everybody at the top of that. I remember writing scouting reports about Ben McLemore and Trey Burke, who went, you know, number 7 and number 9 in that class, thinking about, oh, these guys are on the table for the Cavs to take at number 1. I think that's kind of a similar situation that we're walking into this year, alongside the similar situation of there are going to be guys later in this draft who are going to come out and probably be the best players in this draft because of the vacuum at the top and there not being a clear number one guy or a clear set of guys who, you know, are your future all-stars. And, you know, the Cavs later in that draft in the middle, there were guys on the board who became very, very good NBA players that were drafted in the 10 picks after Karasev was picked. And that, you know, they took, again, one of those swing for the fences guys. They took the guy who had been on the Russian Olympic team at 17 years old and was really young and really raw and didn't speak very good English and you know, they thrust him in and kind of had him learn on the fly. And, you know, if they hit that pick, they look like geniuses, but they didn't, because they didn't really take care of him as they developed him. And, you know, they traded him after a year. So, you know, I kind of wonder what lessons we can take from the way that this draft was managed, especially if the Cavs end up with a top three pick and, you know, they're in a position where, you know, James Wiseman is on the board, but also Denny Avdija is on the board. And what decision do they make in that? Do they try to do the same old thing they've always done, or do they try to, you know, make what seems like the right decision?
So what's the lesson? I think that draft is, that draft as a whole is the most damaging draft the Cavs have. You know, some of it, LeBron wipes away a lot of mistakes.
Yeah.
Frankly, which kind of gets them off the hook a little bit for being bad.
Yeah. I think the lesson to be learned here, and, you know, the Cavs have had difficulties with this throughout the decade, is you gotta know what succeeds in the NBA. You have to know what type of players are going to have value and what types of skill sets are going to be more inherently valuable at this level today. And taking the guy who was billed as, you know, the positive outcome for him is that he's a shorter Zach Randolph, was not the type of guy who's going to succeed.
That's amazing. That's such an amazing today. That's an amazing cop. That's just an amazing cop.
Yeah, I mean, that was his, like, his comps heading into that draft were like a poor man's Charles Barkley and Zach Randolph, and you cannot win even if Bennett had been, you know, good at the things he was purported to be good at. You cannot win with like a 6'7" beefy guy who wins in the post. Like, that's just not gonna work in the at the NBA level, and we saw that, you know, he really struggled to deal with playing like a modern NBA four plays. And I think that that is informative, because there are guys at the top of this draft who their skill sets do not fit with what the NBA is today. You know, Wiseman is, unless he is an elite pick and roll finisher, which he's really not, he's not going to be a valuable player in today's NBA, or he's going to have a very difficult time being that type of guy. And especially being that type of guy with the bigs that the Cavs already have. You know, I think they'd be much more, you know, there's much more value to taking a guy like LaMelo Ball, even with all the baggage that he has, because that guy plays like the type of player that you need in the NBA, where, you know, he plays it like this high, he's comfortable at a high pace. He can do multiple things on both sides of the ball. He can play multiple roles. He's versatile, all that stuff. I think that that makes him, you know, more intriguing. And, you know, you kind of wonder if it's a kind of a similar situation. You know, say the Cavs are picking number two, Anthony Edwards is off the board, they're looking at their options. Do they pass on LaMelo Ball in the same way that they did Nerlens Noel, because he had been medically red flagged for an ACL tear, and then he comes back and plays, you know, like perfectly normal NBA career from a health perspective? I think Ball is kind of in a similar situation as like Noel, and do they make kind of that same read of like, do they pass on the guy who may have a little bit of a question, but is that question really that serious when you stop and think about it?
Trevor, last thing here, the Cavs have a situation where they've had different leadership throughout these. So you could, if this is, these drafts have Chris Grant, they have David Griffin. Malik Griff is sort of the one who's a little more exempt from this because he wasn't drafting as much. You have Kobe Altman now. I couldn't even tell you who the GM was when they drafted, and like when I got, I generally can't remember.
Danny Ferry.
My brain. Okay, so Danny Ferry messed that up, and Danny Ferry's obviously complicated legacy now, but has had a, you know, has been a more successful NBA GM to some degree. What is it about the Cavs, in just from the outside? It's hard for us to know every little detail here, but what do you think it is that leads the Cavs to these kind of galaxy brain drafting decisions?
Well, I mean, it's kind of obvious, even with not knowing like the full circumstances from the things that have come out. You know, it's the fact that there's always been you know, there is the GM's picks and decisions, and then there's the easily pointable, that's a Dan Gilbert pick. That's a Dan Gilbert signing. I think the fact that they don't have a clear, they have never had a clear hierarchy of kind of deference from ownership to the front office, except for in maybe two seasons of David Griffin's tenure, that is what causes these things. That if you look at other teams who have kind of been in a similar situation in terms of their draft outcomes, that is the problem with the Knicks drafting. That is the problem with the Kings drafting, is ultimately the biggest, you know, the biggest help that you can have is kind of an external factor outside of what your front office does, is ownership is a huge determinant of success in the NBA. And we know how that goes with Dan, and how that has gone historically.
Yeah, Dan Kay Felder, for instance, was a Dan pick, and we wild stuff. Trevor, as always, thanks for coming on. Just give everyone a plug on what you have going on right now, and some of the stuff you've been working on, and just how you're, because you still are grinding all that draft tape as we get closer and closer to whenever that's going to be.
Yeah. The best thing that could happen is that draft not happening. I think for everybody's sanity, either it happening as soon as possible or never happening. The last couple of weeks I've kind of been trying to stay away from writing like true scouting reports, just because everything's so fluid. So today at the Step Back, I had something come up that ranked the top 30 draft prospects of the last decade. For the Cavs, Kyrie Irving was the only pick that they, or and Andrew Wiggins, I guess, were the only picks that have made it for them, because I was picking, or I was ranking not just on outcomes, I was ranking on how those players were perceived as draft prospects. So I think I had Kyrie ranked number 8. I had Wiggins ranked, I think, number 15. So both of them were on the board there. Anthony Bennett, suspiciously absent, because I would have probably had to rank 50 guys to get to him. So that was a fun project. Give it a click. It's a slider, which is not great. And we can get into, you know, the media landscape during coronavirus if we want to, but I would appreciate your
we'll have a lot of
page
time
views on that.
Yeah, go yeah. Discover your
nothing
page
but views. Time. Yeah, yeah, I know you guys have time to click through all that stuff. And then, you know, at some point here this week, I'm going to have something coming up on just kind of like general stream of consciousness on how this situation kind of fucked up the draft for everybody. And you know, who stands to suffer the most, and kind of what the quantifying what the uncertainty about this draft caused by this situation is, for everybody involved, for the teams, for the players. So you know, that should be interesting and a good read. You know, I deviate a little bit more from Chad Ford, I think, came out and of the you know, of the crypt, and he put something together on kind of how this affects that. Probably deviates a little bit more from what he thinks. So give that a look as well.
Yeah, there's going to be a column of Trevor if you're the sort as well. We'll have him on to talk more and more draft stuff coming up in the coming week. So that's going to be a ton of fun. And Trevor, as always, thanks so much for joining me and talking about Christian Anga. It's always a pleasure to bring up Sky Anga, the legend himself.
Yeah, you know, what's a good, or, you know, having a podcast with a Carrick Felix mention is always a good day.
That's what the people want, Trevor. That's what the people want. We got David Blatt, we got Ayanga, we got Sergio Karasev. We hit all your boxes, I think.
Yep.
All right, everyone. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you soon.